we're actually going to work Senate House Bill 2197 first, and then here, but not move House Bill 2188. If we do move 2197, we'll hold 2188 to see if there's any conflict amendments or changes that need to be made in House Bill 2188.
Are you going to be a no on 2197 with amendments?
I'm not sure.
I'm just going to pick if you are.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Ryan.
So we need, as soon as Senator Farioli arrives, we'll at least have enough to move into work session.
Drum roll, please.
Well, we're looking for him, maybe.
So how much more, you don't know the number off the top of your head, how much more revenue this raises than the 54 and 50? This number is about $3 million higher, isn't it? Into the day number?
Oh, than the first one we ran? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But that's not right. We were at 93 at best.
Yeah, okay.
Charlie, you're going to be
no. No, Charlie's fine.
Well, we just need one more.
I guess I want to hear.
Okay.
Hear the analysis.
Open a work session on House Bill 2197. Our other two members hear us out there. I'd like to have both of you here in order to move House Bill 2197. Mr. Yates, do you want to, or Dr. Yates, would you like to reacquaint us with the small track porcelain bill that we heard passed about a month ago?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. What it does is essentially establish, well, let me preface it by saying without this bill, essentially all forest land ownerships move into what's been called kind of the industrial program, or the program which eliminates the severance or the privilege taxes, and assesses land at 100% of the lesser of its maximum assessed value or its specially assessed value as determined by the Department of Revenue. What this bill does is to say that for small ownerships, those of less than 5,000 acres, you establish a new program which is optional. The individual who qualifies and who manages his stands to a standard which is acceptable by rule as determined by the Department of Revenue and as enforced by the Department of Forestry can opt into this program where they continue to pay the property taxes on 20% of their forest land value, and then they pay a harvest tax which is not based on value but based on volume of board feet harvested. And that harvest tax starts out, I forget exactly what the rates are, but they're set a little bit different for east and west. And like the maximum assessed value under property tax, which is allowed to increase 3% per year, the harvest tax rate increases 3% per year. So that would go up over time, sort of proportionately with the increases in the maximum assessed value under property. So this bill establishes, essentially continues for 2 years, the existing 80-20 program, which was phased out in 2001, and which would be completely gone. It's gone for privilege tax purposes as of January 1 of this year, but for property tax purposes it will be gone as of July 1 of this year. It continues that for two more years, and then it goes away. And this new program replaces it. Is that sufficient?
That is excellent.
Bring you back to speed.
That is excellent.
Okay, you have two amendments for your consideration to the bill. The A6 amendments, essentially, under the bill, one of the amendments that was made on the House side was that I guess to back up a second, the concern is that some owners may, if the nature of their forest ownerships are such that it's to their advantage, may opt to move in and out of this program so that they're in the program receiving the benefit of reduced property taxes up to the point of harvest, then they move out of the program, make their harvest, avoid the harvest tax, and move back into the program. What the House did is to say, okay, if that happens, you've got to wait 5 years before you can get back in, so you've at least got to pay the higher property taxes for 5 years. What the Dash 6 amendment says is that any time you sell or transfer the property, which is in the small tract forest land program, it is declassified, and you are subject to the additional tax at that time. And that's essentially the effect of that First Amendment. Not quite. The other main impact of that is it takes away the authority of the individual landowner to request a declassification. So once you opt into the program, you're in the program as long as you continue to own that forest land and continue to qualify in terms of the way you manage the property and in terms of your total ownership. You would not be able to get out of the program short of selling the property.
And then the owner?
The new owner has the choice. The Dash 7 amendments, which are also before you, deal with the situation as I understand it, and I've not had a lot of time to really familiarize myself with this question. But the bill has conditions now where if, say, an owner of a large owner has over 5,000 acres, acquires a piece of forest land which is in this program, it's automatically disqualified. If that acquisition occurs in the first half of the year, it's declassified for that year. And so if the larger owner were then to harvest the acquired land, they would not have to pay the harvest tax because it's been disqualified and it's out of the small owner program. If they acquire it in the second half of the year, then that piece of land stays in the small tract forest land program until the end of the year. So if they were then to harvest that during that second half of that year when they acquired it, they would have to pay the harvest taxes on it. And what this does is say that they do not have to pay those harvest taxes if the land is acquired in the second half of the year. That's my understanding.
Yes. Link, do you want to come up and talk to the A7, okay. Senator Ringo? And if someone representing the small tract could come up and at least on the A7s, please come up. That would be wonderful. Senator Ringo.
Well, I had a question for Dick or anybody that could answer it. I'm just looking at the financial impact. The bill sets a severance tax rate at $3.89 for Western Oregon and $3.03 for Eastern Oregon, and I'm wondering how those figures were arrived at.
You don't want to know how the sausage is made.
I have a feeling I don't. But let me ask a different question then. This bill has a negative impact to our revenue, and I'm wondering whether it could not have been crafted in a way so that we wouldn't have a negative impact, so that we could still have the program for the small woodlot owners that they can opt into the program, but in a way so that it's at least revenue neutral.
I guess I'll try to address that. I think that the small woodlot owners will argue that it probably is revenue neutral now. And the reason it's not is because the assumptions that I've made about the behavior of small woodlot owners and their decisions to move into or not move into this optional program. And I'm presuming that those who do have stands for which contiguous acres of similar maturity, in other words, if you got a stand of 30-year-old trees and you're going to basically clear cut or harvest most of those at one period of time, those stands are going to stay outside the program until they've harvested. And so you lose that harvest, which would balance the revenue impact if everyone were to enter immediately.
Uh-huh.
And that's sort of what causes the negative revenue impact. And if you were to raise that harvest tax up sufficiently to sort of cover those costs, you really lose any incentive for people to enter this program because it's going to cost most of the people who enter this program more tax taxes than they would pay under the existing program. The reason they argued that they still want it is that it does tie the taxes to harvest when the money's available to pay those taxes.
I just wondered, and I'm happy for a response from anybody, I mean, I'm very concerned about negative fiscal impacts. Obviously, there's a fair amount of uncertainty here because this, I mean, Dick, you've based this on 41% of the potential acres will enter the program. That's an estimate I realize, and I'm just wondering whether there, but it's your estimate that next biennium is approximately $1.4 million hit, and I'm just wondering whether this could not have been crafted in a way to attempt to be revenue neutral. And it's hard to know.
I'll say this further what I said before. If everyone were to opt into the program, all those who are eligible, it would raise revenue.
Yeah.
And I assume those for whom it's most economically attractive will opt it in.
Right.
And those for whom it's an economic burden or a tax burden will not. And the numbers keep moving around on you. Now, I could make a different set of assumptions that would make this revenue neutral. But just try.
And then we'll just move it down. Mr. Chairman, I think you've gained valuable insight into how revenue effects are calculated in this process.
Yeah,
thank you, Dick.
Senator Deckard, Senator Ringo. I'm Clint Benz, and I'm a CPA and a small woodland owner, National Tree Farmer of the Year this last year, and also was the technical advisor to this committee in drafting this bill. And there's a lot of sausage on the floor coming up with these numbers, but the basic reality is it takes 60 to 80 years to grow a stand of timber. And what we're saying is that we want to pay the harvest, you know, defer our property taxes basically and pay when we harvest. The under the assumptions that Dick has made on this bill, basically over time, the landlords that are in this program will actually probably end up paying more than people that are in the 100% program. In any biennium, whether that's more or less to the state is really a question of how many people harvest. You can make an argument that anybody who harvests in this program in the first 30 years has paid taxes that actually weren't deferred. I own 700 acres. We harvest about 200,000 board feet a year. I'm planning to come into this program. On day one, I have not deferred any property taxes my first year of harvest, but I'm going to be paying a harvest tax my first year, so I'll be basically paying taxes that other people are deferring that it doesn't have anything to do with mine. The reason I would choose to come in is because I can control the timing of the tax, and a good concept in tax planning is you want to pay taxes when you have cash, and the property tax is a significant issue in terms of the long-term holding costs, especially in Eastern Oregon, but here in Western Oregon as well, it's a significant holding cost for the land over two or three generations. So we tried to get as close as we could to zero. With that number, again, Dick's assumption that only 40% of the people will opt in that are currently in the 2080 program, my expectations are much higher than that. Just because most landlords feel the same way I do. Even if we show them they're paying about the same amount of money, but they can have basically control in one and not in the other, because we don't harvest every year. That's one thing that separates the small landowners from the industrial landowners. Industrial landowners will harvest the same amount of board feet every year, doesn't matter what the price is or anything else, because they've got debt service and all those other things. Small woodland owners harvest when the price is good. They don't harvest when the prices are down, and that's also proved historically. So, if you don't harvest for 10, 15 years and then you do a big harvest, this program makes sense for you, and that's the pattern of most small woodland owners.
How could you have arbitrarily adjusting some of your assumptions, what could have been changed to make it this revenue neutral, including in the short run?
The biggest assumption here is 41%. Basically, the assumption is that nobody that's going to harvest, the majority of people that would harvest in the next 5 years will not opt into this program. And that's also under assumption that most people harvest on a clear-cut, large basis. We have a large property. We harvest a little bit every year. And so, I mean, that's really that's the bottom line. The more people that come into this program, the more money will be on the table for everybody.
I understand.
And so that's really the secret of making this thing work is getting out and asking the small landowners that are already in the 2080 program that's there now to come into this new one. Hmm. And they've been begging us for this program. So they don't, I mean, the whole reason why we're here, we spent 5 years mm-hmm. with the small land community trying to come up with a replacement to the 2080 program, which they love.
So, Mr. Chair, so if 2 years from now when we're back here in Senate Revenue, when we find out that only 20% have opted in, you wouldn't mind that we change this bill?
Well, if only 20% of the people have opted in, there's probably not enough money on the table for Department of Revenue will be in here complaining because there's not enough taxes coming in for them to afford the administration.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that would mean anyhow that they're in the...
They'll be in the large landowner program.
They're in the large landowner program at that point. Mm-hmm. Senator Farrelly, did you...
Mr. Chairman, I think the points that I was going to make have already been made. The fact is that this is the product of 5 years of work between... various chairs of the Revenue Committee and the Department of Revenue and the industrial woodland owners in the state of Oregon and the small non-industrial woodland owners. It's been through at least two cycles through the legislature that I'm aware of and lots of interim working group. So this has been thought about a great deal. Mr. Bentz also made the point that the two curves that cross are the years remaining to harvest and there's no guarantee. 30 to 60 years on the west side, 60 to 120 years on the east side, and market conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So when the years remaining to harvest, when the small woodland owner would regard his crop as mature, is always going to be second-guessed and timed by the market conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously when the market's high and the timber is merchantable, that's the time when people harvest. So mm-hmm. those points were made. Mr. Chairman, regarding the amendments to the bill, I think the there are conditions that change from time to time, as we've noticed in natural resource management in Oregon. The idea that you might have a timber tract in a basin that somehow becomes subject to natural resource management constraints would affect how people can harvest and how they can manage their lands.
Mm-hmm.
So to a certain extent, I'm a little bit reluctant to put in an ironclad opt-in and you're there for life provision because some people, in fact, are going to be told as a matter of public policy they cannot harvest, possibly in the future. There are many constraints to timber management today under our environmental regulations. But I'm persuaded that if the concern is that people would opt in and opt out and therefore make this whole process less than effective, then we should go ahead and put that amendment in there and live with it a while and find out if it's working, just mm-hmm. as Senator Ringo suggests. Get feedback from DOR, look at the program over time.
Mm-hmm.
The other amendment, I think the A7s, is it?
Yes.
A6s and
A7s. A6s and A7s. To me, simply provide some clarity on the issue about the number of acres and the date. So I think those are both good and efficacious amendments, Mr. Chairman. I'll support them both.
Efficacious. Senator Hannan, did you?
Mr. Chairman, the only question I had on the Dash 5 and Dash 6 amendments, one deals with line 42 and 43. One deals with line 42 through 45. Are these amendments, the Dash 5 and the Dash 6, are they consistent with each other, or are they...
It's one or the other.
It's one or the other?
Yes.
Yeah, the A6s are the ones that are the operative ones, but it is, they are not, yeah, they are inconsistent with one another. You would.
Yeah, I was looking at this, and I was trying to compare it. Now, the A6 is preferred over the A5.
Yes, the A6 is preferred over A5. Our concern, we dealt with this in the House as well. I understand there's additional concern in the Senate. That's fine. In the bill already is if somebody gets out, they pay a 10-year rollback of taxes that were deferred, and they can't come back into the system for 5 years. So that's a fairly significant penalty. What it means is that we've got 10 years under this program before this is even an issue. It's five sessions from now before somebody who got out of the system would get a benefit, because they have 10 years of the system. If they get out in 10 years, they have to pay back the 10 years of tax anyway. The other concern I have with this, and maybe we'll come back in conference or something and talk about it, is if I'm a small land owner and I purchase a piece of land and it's rolled out of the 2080 program, and then as the purchaser, I basically have to pay the back tax and then start it back into the 2080 program. I think we'd like to have some ability. It's in 2080. I'm a small landowner. I'd like to keep it in 2080, that basically that tax doesn't have to be rolled out. Would be something we'd like to come back and talk about. It's probably outside the scope of this discussion now today, but I think that would be a good a help, so that as a small landowner, if I'm eligible to be in 2080, that I shouldn't have to roll out and pay the tax and then come back in again and start the clock over.
Mm-hmm. And, Mr. Chairman, the other question I have is the -A7 amendments. Are those yours, too?
Those are industries, and those are fine with us.
Link, do you want to speak to the? Would you like Link to
the A7s? Thank you. For the record, my name is Link Cannon. I'm the Director of Forest Resources and Taxation for the Oregon Forest Industries Council. Chair Deckert, Senator Hannon, the A7s really fix what could best be characterized as a timing quirk, I think, in the bill, which is that when lands would be transacted from small owners to large owners, the 10-year rollback tax would be paid, and the land would then go into the large owner program. The timing quirk is that if that happens in the first half of the year, from January to July, and a large owner purchases the land and then harvests the timber, they owe no severance tax. They pay the 10-year rollback tax. They shouldn't owe any severance tax. But because of the way the technical language as to what is disqualification, if you harvest, if under that same scenario, you harvest between July and December, then a large landowner would be liable for severance tax in addition to the 10-year rollback taxes that they paid. So this just solves that and says when a large landowner acquires that acreage, there's no severance tax due from that land thereafter.
Okay. The problem with the A5s, as I see them, is that it doesn't allow for the transfer of ownership. So if I transfer ownership to you, Senator Hannon, you would not then have the option of opting in or opting out. You would have to be abide by any decision that I made. So the A6s allow the receiver the option of opting in and opting out.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Christina, did you want to add anything or subtract?
No, Mr. Chair. Just for the record, Christina McNitt with Oregon Small Woodlands Association. I appreciate the work you did on the A6 amendments. I don't know how you got that down between our conversations today, but we're supportive of this bill and would appreciate it moving forward through the process.
Dr. Yates is... deserves the credit for that one.
Amazing.
And Dexter. Great, thanks. Appreciate it. Any other questions for the panel?
Are we in work session?
We're in
work session. Are you ready for a motion, Mr. Chairman?
I am.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the -A6 amendments dated 5/22/03.
Senator Hannon has moved the -A6 amendments to House Bill 2197 dated 5/22/03. Discussion. Tara, please call the roll.
Mayor Hannon?
Aye.
Ringo?
Aye.
Starr?
Aye.
Mariana?
Aye.
Tucker?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, I would now move the -A7 amendments to House Bill 2197.
Senator Hannon has moved the -A7 amendments to House Bill 2197 dated 5/22/03. Discussion. Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill 2197 as amended out to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Hannon has moved House Bill 2197 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Okay. Well, I'm concerned about the negative fiscal, and it's not huge, and I guess I also acknowledge that there's significant uncertainty surrounding that. But nevertheless, our best brains and Dr. Yates here indicates negative fiscal, and so I'll be voting no.
One thing that I think is important to point out is that the governor has built the fiscal into his balanced budget, and so it is included, that fiscal is included in the governor's budget. Senator Hannon.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'll say that we want reforestation in this state, and this is a tool to move in that direction, and we can't have landowners out there willing to reforest and invest unless there's incentives to do so. And this is one of those examples. And, I appreciate your work on this, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Any further discussion? Tara, please.
There's Hammond?
Aye.
Ringo?
No.
Aye.
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 Okay. Aye. Motion carries. Senator Perry, Perry Ole, would you please carry the bill?
It'll be a pleasure, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Congratulations for all the patience and hard work. I know that this group worked very hard and long and then had to deal with me, so I appreciate that. Your time. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2188. Dr. Yates.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 2188 is, again, sort of, and part of the reason this will probably be held up for a while is that there's some conflicts between the bill you just passed out and this bill. What this does is to go through and clean up all of the statutes that are made obsolete or redundant by the 2001 legislation, which eliminated the privilege taxes and essentially put all forest land on at 100% of its assessed value. This has to be done even though we passed the 2197 out, because there are a lot of provisions there which require the department to do certain studies and certain activities which are no longer necessary. Just from the standpoint of administrative efficiency and cleaning up the reducing the administrative costs for the Department of Revenue, it's necessary to pass this bill out. We will undoubtedly have a series of conflict amendments to it if 2197 goes forward.
So, Dr. Yates, what is the timing then? So we'll need to hold this bill to watch the progress of 2197.
Yes.
Mr. Bentz, Mr. Miller.
Yeah, right. That's what I tell people. Tell me, doctor, if they want me to pick up a scalpel.
I hope we got that on the record. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Deckard, members of the committee. I'm Norm Miller. I'm the Timber Tax Operations Supervisor for the Department of Revenue. Here to talk about House Bill 2188, and actually Dr. Yates has covered an awful lot of what I was going to say. I think it's important that this bill be in place. There is one situation that needs to be emphasized, I think, and that is when the 1999 legislature passed through the concepts, in essence what they did with the Western Oregon Privilege Tax and the Eastern Oregon Privilege Tax is they set the tax rate to zero, which was meant to say we're getting rid of it. But all the laws of things that we have to do still remain on the books. In essence, the law requires that we send forms out to people who are harvesting timber. It also requires that those taxpayers return those same forms completed the way the Department of Revenue requires. So that's a lot of work for zero tax, because the tax rate is zero. So I think it's important that we have that bill to complete this package of this will be the third session of this group of bills. The timing of it is important. When you look at House Bill 2188, getting rid of the privilege tax, and it does so immediately or for 2003, because 2197 actually extends the privilege tax out 1 year, we need to keep those laws on the books for that year. So right now we are poised to make the changes to 2188 to change all the timings to make the two bills work together. If 2197 were to actually lag behind 2188, what we'd have to do is take all the privilege tax laws and put them into 2197, and that is not really a clean process. It would work much better going the other direction. So with that, if you have any questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
Just to clarify, so this saves us two FTE?
Chair Decker, Senator Ringo, at this point in time, that is correct. It's more or less the net effect. Most of this is in the governor's budget, assuming that the small owner bill was going to pass because of the long time we've been working on it. But the net effect is that we would save two FTE, yes.
That's a good thing. Thank you.
Again, I'm Clint Bentz from the Small Woman Association and a landowner. We've been working with a norm for a long time. The whole reason behind 2197 was to simplify the work for the department, and we're fully in favor of this language going away once 2197 phases out.
Questions for the panel? Senator Hannon.
The 2188 revisions,
yes,
and the bill that we just passed, 2197, then what you want to do is hold on to this until 2197 passes, and then we'll do the cleanup of the amendments.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, yes, that would be the most efficient way of handling things. Actually, we were hoping that 2188 would lag behind. It's been held up on the House side just because of the timing of the issue. We're getting down toward the end of the session, so I think things need to keep moving forward at least. But
you know something we don't know.
So hopefully we'll get 2197 out in front, keep it out in front, and then things will fall in place.
All right. Thanks.
More questions? Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Spence, for coming down today. Appreciate your effort and time. Anyone else? Large landowners? Nope.
The one that's sent back to committee.
Great. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2188, and we are adjourned.